Hello and welcome to Illy's Coffee Talks. Season 3 is going to be about all my favorite topics, including slow living, inner work, entrepreneurship, creativity, spirituality, slow traveling, and health. I am Ofelia Cabanero, your host. Enjoy the episode. Because in California, but in California, you were also seeing that, no, the back office a little bit?
Yes.
The other end of it?
Yes, but more so, you know, I was working for, like, I've always worked for small businesses, but the majority and the chunk of a lot of my work teaching yoga in studio back home in San Diego was working for a company that actually got to be pretty big and became very corporate and was franchised. Mm-hmm. So it started to be this kind of whole other thing. And seeing the back workings of that from a teacher perspective, it's not as obvious because you have so many different layers. Like, you know, there's corporate executives and then there's the whole sales team, and it's really like hidden kind of in a way from like the day-to-day runnings of the studio. Whereas here, like at the Looking Glass, you know, this is just one location, it's one room, it's very simplified, so you are able to see, I think, you know, if you want to, more how the business really, mm-hmm. like, runs.
Yeah.
And that is really helpful, like, if I'm in a place in life where I'm, you know, even just testing the waters of, like, I've always had that idea, I'd love to have my own space, so actually, you know, running the business of it versus being in the education of yoga, mm-hmm. is like two very different, yeah. things. So, you know, a lot of times if you have a studio, you have to also really have a good, mm-hmm. business head on your shoulders if you want it to be successful, yeah. and sustainable, yeah. which I think Kristen, for instance, like has without explicitly saying it or making it obvious, yeah. that she does to, yeah. people, but she really does. Like, yeah. she's smart.
Yeah.
And how she would like run a business, mm-hmm. you know, which is obviously why it's still, mm-hmm. here and I'm here teaching. So yeah, having this opportunity to come here, especially after COVID, having a baby, leaving that kind of more corporate job situation in California, it has been such a nice way to come back into in-person teaching, in studio teaching in a smaller space where I've been before and I know a lot of you guys, so I'm comfortable and we can like build our relationships, mm-hmm. off of like a point that isn't zero, mm-hmm. and that I get to see a little bit of, yeah, like how it is to run a studio, and it's like a lot of work. I mean, yeah. I already know that. Like, I don't envy Kristen for like all of the admin stuff, yep. that she has to do. And that I know she underpays herself to do. And a lot of that is like, because that's just what she has to do.
So what do you think so far? Do you need more time to check it out a bit more?
I think so. And also because Kai, my little one, is still not even 2 years old yet. So I just think when you have a baby, those first couple to, mm-hmm. few years are, mm-hmm. so all consuming. And at least, you know, that's not to say I haven't seen a lot of amazing moms just diving right, mm-hmm. into even a new business project, mm-hmm. with a really like a little one. Me energetically, I'm not really sure if that's where I'm at, but I think in the next year or two or three, as he gets a little older, I would be.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Now, if there was another baby, I feel like I would be fucked. I don't know. But I don't know. That's not on the plan immediately, okay. right now. So, like, and who knows, right? We always think something, and then when we're there, yeah. in 2-3 years, it's, like, totally different. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't feel ready right now to go open up my own space, necessarily. Yeah. I really love being here, and then I'm able to lean on Kristen. And I know she's leaning on me, too. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm here. That feels really nice. And this is just a beautiful space. So
yeah.
I feel really lucky, really, really lucky that I had this space to like land in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just to tell people, I mean, I've done other podcasts here, but they're always referred to the Looking Glass. But just for people to know, we're now recording at the Looking Glass.
We are.
It's a yoga studio and a bar studio as
Correct.
Well.
Correct. We just added bar to the programming.
Tuesday morning, Thursday morning, 10:30.
Yeah.
Plug. And it's at the Rhine in Basel, Fellbergstrasse 1.
In Klein Basel, right?
Yeah. It's a beautiful place.
It's a beautiful space, and it's been here a long time.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, probably 10 years.
Almost,
now,
I think. Yeah. I think yeah. almost 10 years.
Yeah. So, it's Kristen's studio.
Yes.
And let's introduce you as well.
Okay. So, I'm Kenna. And I come from California. I was originally born in like the San Francisco Bay Area. I basically grew up in Silicon Valley. And then immediately for university as an adult, 18 years old, I moved to San Diego because I went to the University of California in San Diego, which is an amazing school, part of the University of California system. And I studied dance and sociology. So like, if I'm talking about me, origin story, background, like I'm a dancer. That is what I did, you know, for most all of my life and still now in mm-hmm. some capacities and also going back to more in the future. But yeah, so I studied dance. I got my bachelor's. I also studied sociology because I just love, I'm not like a math, science, STEM person, although I see the beauty and the need of it, especially in our ever-evolving technological society. Mm. But I'm really more a person who likes people. I like ideas. I like language. I like concepts on how societies and structures filled with like complex people, how that all works. Mm-hmm. So sociology is kind of, you know, where I got the social science-y side of my interest, which really lands in like the arts and the body, you know, dance, yoga, that kind of stuff. So I like that social science piece, and I feel like I still use it today in my job in some respects, just working with people. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't want to like talk too much about this background, but I guess just to give an idea of who I am. I found yoga really through dancing, and that was, you know, when I was like, well, I had found it prior, but really when I started to really like, oh, this is a thing that I think I could do that I would really like. I was about like 19 mm-hmm. and I did a yoga for dancers workshop, mm-hmm. like a summer intensive at the university that I attended with a separate like private group. But that group, like the leader of that group was a professor basically at the university, and all the professors use the university to do their like,
experimenting.
Correct. Their professional work, right?
Yeah.
Which they get their grants for and things like that yeah. through university. So I found yoga at about 19. I actually went and studied abroad in Buenos Aires, Argentina when I was like 20, 21. And so I knew that I liked yoga and I was curious about it, so I wanted to find it there. And I found it and fell more in love with it. I always will remember Georgina, my teacher in Buenos Aires. She was an Ashtanga teacher, and she did crow pose. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit, she is badass. Like, I want to do that, you know?
Is it?
No, at least I didn't know how. And, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of times dancers, like, yeah. we're so strong on the bottom, especially let's say if you're like classically ballet oriented. In modern contemporary dance, we do a lot more floor work, so there is much more upper body integration, I would say, in terms of strength. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, my upper body shoulder strength is something I have to really work on a lot. And so seeing her do crow pose was so inspiring for me. And also, obviously, I just like loved how yoga came really naturally in a way, because I had the strength and the flexibility. I had the embodiment. I knew how to use my body consciously. Mm-hmm. But yoga compared to dance was such a different way of using it. It was really like to go inward rather than to be outwardly expressive. Mm. So it was like this beautiful practice that I was like immediately obsessed with. And felt was such a compliment to my dancing and was so rich that I was like, that is a whole world that I can spend my lifetime now diving into, which is what I've done, you know? So I came back from studying abroad and I was like, I have to finish up my university degrees, yoga, like, oh my God, I'm gonna do a teacher training or something. And then I was working part-time at Lululemon, which is like every yoga teacher, and their mother at that era, right? So I graduated in 04. Is that correct? I'm sorry, 08. Everyone in that era worked at Lululemon, I swear to God. Like, if you taught yoga, you worked at Lululemon. And this was when they were really expanding their stores in Southern California. So it was cool, actually, because we got to wear their clothes and go out in the community and take classes. And it was like, that was the marketing for them, but they paid for us to go take classes. Yep. You know why it was so cool? Because I got to do all these different styles, and this was before I had landed in a teacher training, so I really got to sift through some different lineages and things like that, and like really home in on like, this is my vibe and this is what I want to study.
What was it?
It was Anusara yoga. Mm-hmm. I also really liked Jiva Mukti, but which is what Kristen teaches, right? And Lu, and is it also a beautiful practice. Also, like Anusara though, has had its problems and flaws with being stuck in this classical patriarchal model in a way and in a different way than Anusara. And also, I'm not going to like talk too much about that because I don't want to like talk too
kill
much
the vibe.
Yeah. I just don't want to talk about Anusara imploding it on itself. If you know the story, like, fuck, you know the story. But I found Anusara yoga and an amazing studio and an amazing teacher who to this day, I count my lucky stars that that was the teacher that I originally trained with. Her name is Sherry Schreck. She's incredible. She was really the epitome of what you would want in a teacher. Inclusive, compassionate, not at all like guru, kiss my feet, but just commanding respect because she has the knowledge and the kindness and the wisdom. An amazing teacher, you know, like, and that really, I think, put me so solidly in my own 2 feet to start like a yoga teaching career. So I credit a ton for that. And so I thank Lululemon in a way.
No, you know? Lululemon is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they also have their own problems, right? Yeah. But, you know, like, take it for what it is.
It's the best quality still.
Yeah, totally, it's true.
You don't see through.
It's so true, and I still have, like, Lululemon leggings
from 10 years ago.
Correct. Yeah. So, same. Totally. there are other good companies out there, though, like Tavi Noir and, like, Beyond Yoga, but anyway. So that's how I got started, and pretty much once I got started, it was just like, boom, you're in, keep going.
Started teaching. Then.
Yeah, yeah. So all through my 20s, let's say, I was teaching yoga, I was building that part of my career, I was still dancing professionally, so I was going to the university for rehearsals, we were performing locally in San Diego, but we were also touring, so I've done a lot of international travel to teach and to perform dance, contemporary dance, also teach jazz dance. Also at this time, bar was becoming a huge thing. So basically, I was at the yoga studio teaching, and I could say, oh, we're bringing bar classes because it's like really popular or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, what is this? And then I go look at it, and I'm like, I can teach this, and I can teach it a lot better than this person who has no dance experience is teaching it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a dancer to teach bar, but maybe it helps. And as a practitioner, if you really want to do a bar class that's really like actually grounded in dance technique, you probably want to have somebody teaching it who has some idea of that. And
so ballet more or any dance?
I think any dance, I mean, bar in particular really is coming from ballet. So, you know, I think ballet, but any embodied practitioner, even if they're coming from the world of Pilates or strength training. But a dancer just sort of has built in, like, a sense of turnout, you know, a sense of just the aesthetic and the technique is different. And like bar, we're not really going for aesthetic as much because it's not a performance. It's more of a fitness class, really. But yeah, it's graceful, right? Yeah. And you've done some bar classes with me, and you've done several. So you know, like it's, you know that the dance is the background and that we're pulling from that.
Yeah.
So around this time when I was really developing my yoga career, and I was still dancing professionally, I was also starting to teach bar. So those are like my three worlds. And I would say eventually, like, I mean, okay, so how do I say this? When I turned 30, well, actually I turned 30 in Europe. So I got married at 29, and then we went to Europe for that whole year of 2016. And so we lived in Italy that year, and I came up here to Basel a couple times. I went up to Germany a couple times. I went to Dubai. I led a bar teacher training
in Dubai.
So cool. And I led a yoga retreat in Tuscany. I also taught yoga to teenagers in southern Italy at a school. So I did tons of cool stuff. And that was my first real year, like, not in America, like working abroad, living abroad. And I thought, oh my God, what the hell am I going to do without my three classes a day teaching? And in retrospect, I actually did so much cool stuff that added to my capacity and my resume when I came back to America at the end of 2016. And that was like hit the ground running time, basically. So
when did you get into Ketona yoga?
Okay, so that I got into at the end of 2019. So let me go back a little bit. So I started in Anusara yoga. And so it's like a Hatha practice, which is really grounded more in tantric philosophy versus like classical Patanjali centered yoga sutras, everything kind of philosophy. So I was really teaching that. And then obviously, like most teachers know, like, okay, you do 200 hours. Great. That's nothing, basically. So what are you going to do next? So my next, and I took a few years. I didn't go right into like my 300. After my 200, I established like, what does it look and feel like to teach for a while and really get my hands dirty. And then I went to India to do my 300 hour. Which gives me 500 hours. And so that was more of a vinyasa training. And it was still rooted in tantric philosophy. So all of my yoga studies, for the most part, have been very tantric, which for me is a beautiful thing because it's a more feminine balanced. It's a little bit more about possibility and staying in your body and having this amazing human experience in your body rather than trying to like get out and liberate from the body. That could be a whole podcast topic on its own, so I'll move on. But so, you know, Hatha, Anusara, Vinyasa, and then I was back in America at this point. Well, I went to India in 2015, and then we spent 2016 in Italy, and then we came back to America at the end of 2016, and then I was doing yoga therapy. Also, I should mention I had studied yin. So I actually did my first yin training in Zurich in 2016 with Joe Barnett. So I kind of also started my yin training in Europe, really, and I just fucking fell in love with that like immediately and still love it. So yoga therapy, yin, vinyasa, hatha, this is like a lot of different worlds that merge, and I really like love all of them and have a hand and a foot in all of them. And then there just does get to be this point, okay? I think for any teacher, yoga practitioner, and also before COVID, before the whole world blew up, in vinyasa, in yoga in general, we were having a lot of conversations that were very frank and very important, I think, about alignment, technique, flow, you know, what does that look like? And is this really helping or hindering practitioners? Because vinyasa is wonderful, but it's also very trendy, and you have a lot of yoga teachers on the scene who are mediocrely trained or not trained enough. and you have a lot of bodies in a room, and one teacher can only do so much, mm-hmm. you know, with mm-hmm. such little experience or training, and so many different people and life experiences in front of them. So mm-hmm. trying to fit all those people into one little model mm-hmm. is like impossible. And so, you know, and I just know this also from experience, like a lot of practitioners are really hurting themselves, like a lot, doing mm-hmm. this like up, down, in, out flow, like vinyasa, chaturanga, like. So there were so many interesting conversations happening around that, and I was never of the mind of like, I want to get out of vinyasa, because I love vinyasa. I'm a dancer, so I appreciate rhythm, flow, seamlessness, connection. I love all of that, but it's just like not the full story, and mm-hmm. also knowing my origin is more like in a hatha practice, it made sense for me to A, discover Katona Yoga and be like, this shit is weird and this is very cool. It's very cool and there's so much material here that I can use in my current teaching and will also help me evolve mm-hmm. as a person and as a practitioner. So I was at that point basically where I was like, okay, I am ready for something else. Because being a teacher in yoga is a lifelong learning, right? You're never done training, which is a beautiful thing. And I think that's like, if you want to know where a good teacher is, you go to the teacher that is always still student mm-hmm. themselves, right? So Kristen had already discovered Katona Yoga at this point. I don't even know how she discovered it, honestly.
I don't know.
No clue. But she was already in it. And had already, like, told me some about it. And I remember she being like, and your foot. And this is, like, your basement. And this is, like, the mother. I would, like, look at her and be like, what?
Whatever.
Like, okay, weirdo. What are you talking about? But I love and respect Kristen so much. And I know how smart she is. So I know if she's into this stuff, I would probably be interested, you know? And so at the time, my husband was, I think this was when he was in Norway training for his job, doing his thing. So from San Diego back to Europe, that was happening for us in our marriage, going back and forth a little bit. So on one of those trips, I went to visit him and then I would stop through here mm-hmm. on like the way out or something. Mm-hmm. And I actually think I made a special trip over to do Dajis's chair immersion mm-hmm. in Katona Yoga in November 2019. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, I went to Norway in April and September. And then I flew all the way back here to do that because then I was subbing a bunch of classes for Kristen because she was going on a holiday. So I subbed the classes as payment for my immersion. That was like our little trade situation. So that's how I discovered Katona Yoga. It was with Dajis. And it was a chair immersion. And how lucky and auspicious is that? Because first of all, Dajis is really, I mean, she's not like Naveen, the founder, but she's like literally like one of the first teachers really to go out into the world and share this material under like Naveen and Abby. So Dajis is an amazing teacher. She's just like a little older than me. She's like Kristen's age. And she also is a dancer. So she has a dance background. She's super smart. She's just like a feminist. And so the way she spoke about Katona Yoga, it was just like, check, 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 check. Like, down with the patriarchy. Let's like really look at, you know, universal archetypes, which means, you know, these poses aren't male or female, but they can really work for both, you know, depending on the approach. There was, you know, more like Chinese medicine theory, five element theory in there. So they kind of go more from the lens of like China versus India.
Mm-hmm. Like yin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they don't explicitly ever say the word tantra, but the way they describe a lot of the philosophical stuff and the theory of Katona Yoga for me really makes me think a lot about more tantric philosophy and how I've learned it over the years. And also like that definition of yoga, like what is yoga? You hear it a lot. It's union, mind, mm-hmm, body, mm-hmm. breath, which is like beautiful and like kind of simplistic. What I always learned it as in like my more tantric trainings is like yoga is skillful action for a desired result. So Katona yoga, that I feel like that's what they talk about mm-hmm. a lot. It's like we're building skills and we're learning techniques mm-hmm. to be functional, to be substantial in the world so that we can play well with others and really like go for what we want. Mm-hmm. So like
talk of the vision.
Correct. And that's like the manifestation, right? Like in a much better termed way. Mm-hmm. I think it's not just like, oh, you meditate on it and then like poof, it manifests because you trust the universe. No, you trust yourself because you show up. And so you prove to yourself that like you're willing to put in the effort and the work for what you want. And you're also willing to be open to what comes out of it, which often doesn't exactly like look and align with what you thought it might be, but hence something always comes out of your efforts, right? Mm-hmm. So, that's when I discovered Katona yoga. And the other interesting thing about it was like, that was November 2019. Then I went home. I led a retreat to Costa Rica in January. Thank God, that was amazing. But thank God that was in January because then, you know the story, boom, boom, a couple like months later, it was like the whole world was
shut down in
COVID. Yeah. So everything went online, right?
Yeah.
So not only my own teaching and which was like hard, but also really amazing for a lot mm-hmm. of yoga teachers in the beginning, mm-hmm. I think, because all of a sudden we had like 20, 30 people on a Zoom and we could make like all this money for one class. And it was like, wait, this is too good to be true. Let's
More
go.
More people were on Zoom than in actual class then?
No, like similar amount, but like.
But the fact that you don't have to go to the studio.
Yeah, I wasn't paying the studio. Basically, they were just all paying me directly.
Yeah, I did. You have to rent the space.
No. No, I taught from home.
But I mean, before. You have to, that's how it worked?
No, but like, you know, like when you're employed by a studio, there's always some cap, right?
Yeah.
Like we can only pay you max this amount. Mm-hmm. This is your hourly rate or like per head, this mm-hmm. is the cap, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, it was really like an abundant opportunity, honestly. And it continued to be and has showed me actually what a gift that was, like getting some of my shit online because, mm-hmm. you know, it's for sure not for most people. Like most people, as I know, would prefer to practice in person, like mm-hmm. in a space, mm-hmm. but online is also actually really cool and it's a viable option. And so with Katona yoga, like that was a lot of my study. It was online because actually, so the cool thing is I did do Dages' immersion in November and then February before COVID, Abby came to Los Angeles. Mm. So I went to her in LA for 4 days. So that was already 2 30-hour immersions with two extremely powerful teachers that are like literally right below the founder of Katona Yoga, who is Naveen. And I'm doing this like she's at the top. It's not like that. She's in the center. She's in the center of a web.
But it's not. Abby is not the founder.
Technically, it's Naveen, but like let's say maybe Abby was on that journey with her the whole time. So a lot of ideas were being bounced off, and Abby helped spread. Mm-hmm. Oh, like she's the teacher who's been coming to Europe, for instance, mm-hmm. and like, you know, really teaching it everywhere. Mm-hmm. So they're both really important. But yeah, it's Naveen. It's her with her. So COVID happened. I signed up for like the digital studio online pre-recorded classes with Abby Studio in New York. So, you know, I was really like interested in this material and it was all very new to me. So I wanted to keep studying it and I very much did it in like an independent study kind of manner. So a lot of it was online, like a ton of, it was more online than in person. Mm. So I have gotten in a good rhythm, I guess, with that being disciplined to do my online practices. For me, it's fine. I mean, I will always love to be in a room with people and have teachers adjusting me physically and, but I also can derive a lot of greatness out of the online experience. And maybe that's because I've been doing this a while and I am actually a disciplined person. So mm-hmm. I can totally craft a space in my house and do it.
Yeah.
And I'll get a lot out of it.
I have to come to the studio.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
I know most students are like that. And that's fine, you know? I mean, yeah. Like, so
And so you also started your membership then in that time?
No, that was later. But I had that idea for a long time. And I couldn't quite get my shit together to make it happen in 2016. I think at that time it was like, oh, YouTube. Right?
It was still new.
Yeah. But now I've realized, like, okay, YouTube, like, that is really a one in a million thing. Like, you know, if you want to really make a career out of that, you have to put so much time in it, and I think you have to be lucky. So, I just was like, I'm going to make my own membership. The people that I know me already and want to stay connected with me, like, they'll sign up. And I didn't start that until late last year. So it really, like, took me almost all of COVID, having a baby, like, really pulling out of the corporate job and team that I had been on for a long time and cultivated a lot of these relationships in San Diego through that job for me to start that. So yeah, that wasn't until like 2 years later or something. But, you know, now basically I just finished the Katona mentorship. Well, I have a few classes left to do, but I basically have my 200 hours in that. So I'll be Katona certified in addition to Yin, yoga therapy, vinyasa, hatha, and nyasara. You know, it's like a lot of things now, but I love that because I can teach whatever. You can put anybody in front of me, any mixed group of people. You want to flow, you want to do breath work, you want to meditate, you want to do stuff on a chair, like whatever. We can do anything.
And so what do you want to tell people who, well, two things, I guess, but, well, let's focus on the students for now who only have one style that they like to practice. What would you tell them? For example, for me, who...
Yeah.
Doesn't like Katona at all. I still come to your classes. But yeah, what would you tell?
Interesting, because I've actually been thinking about this question because I knew you'd talk about this. Yeah. So I think, first of all, it's super important to know what you like and to know what works for you. So I would never diminish that in anybody because you know yourself, right? And you're the one who has your own life experience and you know what you want and what you need. So that is like, first off, that has to be like the first thing said. And like, that's the main understanding. So if you know you like flow, fuck yeah, like own it and like do flow. Cool, you know? But also why I give you credit is because you're not closing yourself off necessarily to the things that you don't even know you need or might like yet. So what I would say is that know what you like, own it, and then also just check yourself from time to time and just stay open to having different experiences and doing different styles of practice because no matter what, you're going to change over time. That's just a given. Like, you're not going to be the same static person. Even tomorrow, you know, you will have changed a little bit. There are some things that stay constant, of course, and there are always, like, universal truths and archetypes and things like that. But as long as we stay open and receptive, and like that's the whole point of coming to class too, right? Like if you already know what you need and you want to just do what you want, you'd stay home and do a personal practice because what are you going to get from a teacher if you're not actually open to like something new and fresh that isn't sourced from you, right? So that's the whole reason I think of going to class and studying with a teacher is to like gain from them things you couldn't get on your own or like have concepts land in a different way where maybe you understand it in a new sense in your body and in your practice. So also just for the sake of saying it, I mean like diversity is the shit basically.
And as a teacher also, you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I just think I'm able to serve more people with the more tools that I have because people are just so different. Like it's actually crazy and wild how people in some ways are the same, but that they're also wildly different and then everywhere in the middle of that spectrum. So I just think, you know, if you're like a plain Jane type and that's your personality, like maybe you're an A type personality and you like to have a lot of control and you're a little rigid like that and you have your routine, but that's what works for you. Okay, cool. Like maybe you're somebody who thrives on going to Bikram set sequence or whatever, mm-hmm. a language that you speak, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. I am not type A, really. Like, I have some elements of type A. Like, I am a go-getter, and I am, you know, I show up. But I'm also, like, creative and artistic, and I'm kind of, like, weird. I like altered experiences, whatever that means, you know? So I just like get bored with the same thing, and I just need new material. And, I think, yeah, I just think opening yourself to new experiences is really important. Mm-hmm. And like knowing what you like is really important too. But then also just knowing, like, then we get kind of stuck in our preferences. And then there's a point where you, how much you can grow and learn beyond that, it gets limited. So that's the beauty of doing different methods. And even if you don't like it the first time or the first few times, going back and trying again. But if it's with a teacher you trust, better, right? Because then at least you know this teacher's not bullshitting you. Like, you trust them. So if this person trusts and likes whatever they're teaching, there must be something to it, right? So, is that answering your question at all?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And also, we all often say the way you do one thing is the way you do everything.
Yeah.
What would you, is it from a, so from a teacher perspective, you see so many types of bodies and so many ways of doing a forward bend or any pose, really. So what do you have to say about that?
Okay, so it's really hilarious, actually, that I can just see a person practice, and I know so much about them.
Yeah, tell us!
It's hilarious. And it's wild, because your mat is a mirror. And what you just said, how you do anything is how you do everything, is, like, so true. Mm-hmm. Like, the way you approach stepping forward into a lunge and how you meticulously set it up so that it's all measured and then everything's in the right place. Like, how you sustain it once you're actually up in there for a good few breaths. Like, all those things can tell me a little piece of your personality and how you do things, basically. So maybe that's also why I like doing all different kinds of practices and playing with all different kinds of approaches, because I just want to have that varied experience so that no matter what the situation I find myself in, it's like I've got all these different things that I can pull from. And it's not just like the one way or the one method. And then that's also something I want to say, is it's like not this or that. It's and. And that's something we talk about a lot in Ketone Yoga. Like, it doesn't have to be this or that. It can be this and that. And it's just about not which one you choose, but like when you choose it for what appropriate situation. Right?
So can you give us an example on the mat and then off? I mean, off is obvious, but do you have an example?
An example of like...
And...
Okay, so yeah, like if you're somebody who you learned Warrior One, you have your heels in one line, and then you crank those hips forward, and even if your back knee and ankle are like, what the fuck, talking to you, like, I don't think this is my biomechanically sound, you just push through it, because this is the way you learned, it's this way, okay? Whereas... No, like, you can actually step your back foot wider so you're on railroad tracks versus a tightrope with your feet, and it will give you so much more range to spiral inward your back thigh and hip that it'll be actually pleasurable for you to align your hips forward, right? And then, like, see what that frees up above, because I guarantee if there's more space and fluency below, it's going to translate above. So, you know, you won't... I see a lot of times that very, like, Ashtanga kind of, like, Warrior One, heels in a line, feet are together, the shoulders are up here, like, there's, like, just no curve happening in the back body, like, I don't even know, you know? That doesn't look fun to me to practice like that.
I think that's an important point, that people should not suffer when they practice.
No.
It should feel juicy.
Correct.
And, yes, you work your muscles, for sure, but not your joints or, yeah. You know?
I sure don't come to yoga to suffer. Now, also, I know I'm a bit of a unique case because I'm a dancer by background. So yoga, I mean, why did I become a yoga teacher? Probably because I was naturally kind of good at it. It came easy to me.
It was easy.
Okay. So I want to be honest about that. Whereas, like, my husband, like, doesn't come to yoga to suffer, but it's like, yin, forget about it. Like, he wants vinyasa. Yeah. He doesn't like katana either. He wants vinyasa because he just wants to keep moving, yeah. And he doesn't even want to have to, like, sit in any one thing and realize how tight he is in his body. He wants to just keep moving. He wants to bust out one-legged crow, like it's nothing. And I'm like, damn you! I'm like, 10 years, I can't do that. Okay, whatever. But
so yeah, the way you do one thing, you do everything.
And like the warrior one, like it's just like, just consider exactly, like open the stance a little bit, like open your hands up there, like, or warrior two, what I've been finding that I'm teaching a lot is here in Europe, but also in America, like there's this flattening happening in warrior two. Like I think people feel they need
down.
Yeah. And they feel like they need to spread their hips out in opposite directions, which is just like, doesn't make sense in the way that pose is set up anatomically to do that. It would, if you were like in, goddess squat. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you've got that back leg turned in, mm-hmm. It's like fitting between two narrow planes of glass and triangle. That's another really bad cue from like late 2010s, early 2000 whatever.
Hey, it's interesting how it changes.
It right? has changed so much. So much.
And still I talk to other yoga teachers and they have other cues, or for Utkatasana chair, for example, everybody teaches it a little bit differently.
Yeah. And it's okay. It's cool. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure at some point I told people to tuck their tailbone.
Mm-hmm. I sure did.
Right?
But,
and now I wouldn't say it, but I also wouldn't say just like,
Your butt up.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you're going to want to keep your low belly engagement, right? And you're going to want to keep some length in the tailbone.
But that's why I think the most important thing, or one of the most important thing, is to empower people to get to know their bodies.
Yes.
And to feel into their bodies and to know themselves, how much, you know, you need to tuck or not tuck or whatever.
And that's yoga,
engage,
right?
Yeah.
That is yoga. And that's why I like to have this conversation of and. Mm. Because it's just widening the field of the mind for possibility. Like, so that in your warrior two, like, let's internally rotate that back leg, bring that hip forward a little bit, bring some of the curve back into your ass and your lower back. Again, thank you. Like that looks more natural and human and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then like see where it takes you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see so much about people about how they show up for their practice.
Do you have like, so type A, for example?
Yeah, is like fast, always ahead of my cues, like know it's coming, like maybe they already get there before I even say it. They are a little more rigid. They like their one way of doing things. And if I offer something a little weird, they might be doing it, but like something's tense, you know, or they're just like maybe checked out and they're not doing it at all.
Yeah.
And, like, that's fine, too.
Yeah.
I don't take it personal.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, yeah. You know. Maybe when I was less mature, I used to take things more personal. Now I'm like, oh, whatever.
You do you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because it's more about them than you.
Yeah, exactly. And whereas, like, somebody who's really go with the flow, like, which is a beautiful thing. Like, you can see that, too, on the mat. Because maybe they could tighten up and clean up the alignment in some places for boundaries and for safety and like foundation. And, you know, sometimes those types, it's like you need to help keep the fire lit,
mm-hmm.
because maybe they're the type that are just the moment it gets tough, they're going to like drop in a child's pose and be like, forget this. But actually maybe what it would serve them, not every time necessarily, but sometimes it's like, no, keep going. Like, mm-hmm. don't stop.
Mm-hmm. It's here also for them to know when they should take a break and when they can push it a little bit.
Yes.
And that's in the muscles.
And that's ultimately always going to be left to them to decide, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I can help guide, and I, as a teacher, not only, you know, give you the technical cues and things, but I also help guide you, like, for some of those bigger questions, like, you know, when do I stop? When do I keep going? Mm-hmm. Like, how am I approaching this sequence right now or whatever? But it's always going to end be like your personal decision. And so yoga is really about personal responsibility in that way. Mm-hmm. So the teacher is always going to be there as a guide and support and to, you know, teach you, help you learn. But it's all like, what do you do with that information then? Mm-hmm. Like the teacher can't do anything mm-hmm. of any of it mm-hmm. for you. Especially, like you said, like you asked, when you're off the mat, mm-hmm. when you're not in the studio, in the practice. That's when it actually really, like, you know what it's doing for you, mm-hmm. right? It's when you're in a fucked up situation in life and you have to call on the tools of yoga to help you stay centered and calm and grounded and not lose your shit and, like, be emotionally, like, yeah. even keel, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is what it should help you with.
Correct.
But, yeah.
It's a process.
It's a process. It's hard.
It's lifelong.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. We'll always be human. So we're always going to contend with that, I think. But yoga is such a beautiful practice for embodiment. And then through that, like, the breath and the mind. And that's why yoga really is this union, you know, by that one translation mm-hmm. of body, breath, mind. Because... Mm-hmm. if you can sync all those up, you can braid those things together, you get this, like, fourth entity, which is something different than just, like, you walking around unconsciously, not in your body, not mm-hmm. connected to your breath.
Yeah, I think it can really bring a lot, but I think it's really also very easy to go into the ego even more, you know,
can
in
be.
The scene.
Can be.
So,
yeah, like the holier than thou, or like, you know, like virtuous, like, what is that called, that term? When you're kind of like patting yourself on the back for being so virtuous and like so yogic.
The spiritual.
Like, I meditate for 20 minutes every morning, so you should listen to me. Like, okay.
Yeah.
No, it's a good point you bring up because also, as we know, like all spiritual practices, you get a lot of people that are vulnerable coming into those spaces and they're easily influenced. Mm-hmm. And then if you get like this patriarchal guru student mm-hmm. setup like yoga has classically been in, that is like a recipe for disaster mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. You're going to get abusive situations coming out of that where somebody is disempowered, somebody has too much power, mm-hmm. and what comes out of that. Mm-hmm. So, fuck yeah. All yoga teachers have to have their ego in check, especially because it's a big responsibility guiding a room of people, you know, and they're vulnerable, you know, mm-hmm. no matter what, even if they're like, have their head on their shoulders and it's all good. They're having a fine day. There's still vulnerability there. So for me, that's like an honor and a privilege. So I really take that seriously. And I guess I just hope that as I do and practice more yoga, the ego is never something I want to get rid of. We all need an ego. Mm-hmm. It's like survival, you know, at a basic level. But yeah, just to remember, like, okay, I'm the teacher, the student, but then it's flipped also. Like in a class, you're my teacher and I'm a student, mm-hmm. you know? And we're all like doing this together mm-hmm. and we're all learning together and evolving together because it's a collective thing, mm-hmm. really. I mean, yoga is personal, of course, and it always will be, but really that's in service of, I think, the collective. So I would say this a lot to like my American students, you know, like, cool, you do yoga, great. Like, and what are you doing with that? Mm-hmm. Like, is this all only about
kicking up in handstands?
Yeah. Or is it only about you getting a peak pose or you being super fit or like whatever? Like, mm-hmm. what are you using that elevated consciousness for? Mm-hmm. Is it to go out into your community and like actually help others and like make a difference, or like even like vote, be civil, like, you know, civically involved, like all those things, you know, are like important and matter. So the ego should help fire that stuff up, like fuel it. But then obviously, you know, the ego will always need to be tamed by like spirit and regard, because the ego is like too personal. It's not.
It's a kid.
Yeah, and it's just not the collective, mm-hmm. right? So like, this thing is good for me, great, but is it also good for Ophelie, right? You know, I'm not just speaking then from my ego, but mm-hmm. I'm including you in that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's important to ask yourself as a student why you do yoga, but more so even as a teacher, why do you teach?
Mm.
And this is what we were talking about earlier off podcast.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, because I got asked, and I said that on other podcasts, but I got asked by the teachers at the first teacher training I took, why do you want to teach? Mm. That's something teachers ask often. And then I used to say and think, yeah, because it's healthy, because it makes me feel so good, and you just want to share that. Yeah. But underneath that, and I speak for myself, but I'm sure a lot of, it's the case for a lot of people, I just thought it was cool and probably wanted to be liked or just do the cool thing. I mean, I've done that my whole life, then just do the cool next thing, the cool next thing. And yeah, so really investigate what is it. Do you really want to just share it because you're so selfless, and or just it might also evolve year after year. But yeah.
And speaking to what you just said, it sounds pretty innocent to me. I mean, I actually think there's a lot of heart in that. Like, it made you feel good, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. you wanted to be liked. And I think that's so human, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, of course.
And then the beauty of it is, like, what grows out of that, yeah, once you're actually, like, yeah, in the mud doing the work.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great question. And fuck, I don't know. Why do I want to teach yoga? It's really not to be, like, rich. although I will dispel this myth that if you're a yoga teacher, you're, like, broke and poor and pathetic all the time, because that's not true either, at least not where I'm coming from.
Where I'm coming from, yes!
Yeah, it's not, I don't do it to have the cushy corporate position, that's for sure. But, gosh, yeah, like, I'm just a people person, you know? And I just have always gotten energy from people. I love working with people. I love, ultimately, to help people. And as I notice the way our societies are set up, how many people really are suffering and struggling on a daily basis for multiple reasons, whether it's physical, emotional, energetic, what have you. Yoga is such a beautiful system for addressing so many different layers, like outside in of a person and as a collective. I think we're more in a personal address with it now. I would love to see yoga go more collective in mm-hmm. its higher arching goals at some point, you know, like world peace and equity and stuff. It would be cool. But, you know, mostly it's just like, hey, I have this 9-to-5 job at the office. I have to sit all the time. My back is fucking killing me. Like, help.
Yeah. And I think also what I notice when I come here is, or any, yeah, many studios over the years, you build a community in the studio and it's like-minded people.
Such a good point.
And I love it because, yeah, like, I come here and I see my friends.
That is such a good point.
So I think it serves people a lot.
And that's the collective piece, right? Exactly. That's such a good point you brought up. Community is huge, and it's like, you know, when we're doing yoga, like, we're doing it in community, like a little, like the way we did it this morning. It's like everybody's having a personal experience in community, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. then I think that's really where, like, the higher yoga starts to come in. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you actually take yoga out of that personal experience into the collective? Mm-hmm. And so that's the beginnings of it. And it's just, like, seeing your friends at studio and, like, making a connection, mm-hmm. or, like, planning a coffee date or planning, you know, some piece of art that you're going to work on or like whatever.
Often I have big realizations when I'm on the mat.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Because it just opens you up, right? Yeah. It opens up those lines of communication that get blocked or clogged or stagnant otherwise. I mean, yoga is like an alchemical situation. Like, it's literally manipulating the inside. So it's opening up those lines of communication and how energy travels. So that is like, of course, you know, like we have some of our best
thinking, or you are, but you should, you're moving. Yeah. So you think of moving first and then the back thoughts are there and then sometimes something comes up.
Yeah, you mine for the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's by like, you know, doing things in a different way too, that you're able to get out of that habitual experience and like see something in a new perspective. So that is really, really powerful.
And to also come back to what you were saying, I always like to share the struggles of whatever, entrepreneurships or yoga is also entrepreneurship.
Totally. Right? If you want to have success at it, right?
You got to be good at everything. That's what
it's
you
hard.
Said at the beginning.
Yes.
So what did you learn on your journey? What would you recommend to someone starting to teach or wanting to be successful at it or something?
Such a good question. So I've learned so much. And I would say that teaching yoga is like, yeah, you do have to be quite entrepreneurial. I think if you want to get above a baseline of just like, I'm just teaching classes in a studio. And if you're only ever just teaching classes in a studio, you are going to be income-wise quite limited. Although you can't discard it. It's like the number one foundation.
To teach you how to teach.
Correct. Yeah. Because that's also how you meet people. That's how you foster the relationships of trust. Mm-hmm. That's how you hone your skills, you know? So teaching at a studio is not always glamorous, especially those times when you have three people in the class or like whatever, you know, show or whatever. You have a horrible experience. Like, I've had plenty of them, trust me. But you know what? Like, that comes with the territory, and I promise that, like, that mud of the lotus has so much value. So just show up and just get in the mix and just put yourself out there and just be willing to do it and like, be humble, dude. Everybody's got to start somewhere and we all kind of have to start at the bottom and make our way up. It's just how it works. So just, you know, put yourself in spaces that make you feel good though. That make you feel empowered, that you really feel like you can teach from an authentic place. That's super important. So having a safe space to be you and do that is huge and not always easy to understand exactly like where that will be. So sometimes you make mistakes, you know, and it's okay. It's fine.
Were there phases where you thought, fuck all of this, I'm going to stop everything?
You know, not really, because I don't know what other choices I would have really had. And also, like, in America, like, okay, go get your master's degree if you want to be like in debt by like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, it's totally dumb. Europe has a way better system, by the way, for higher education.
You would not have gone to an office or something. That was not an option.
No. No, because I have a strong ego in that way. Like, I'm like, I want to be an art in the body. And no, that would be really hard for me to go do something like that. And that's also just the type of person that I am. Like, my work in the world is a huge part of my identity. So, like, that part to me is really important, that I have to, like, actually really love what I do and believe in it. You know, what do I think is so important is, like, showing up to your classes, just meeting people, getting your energy out there. And then once you feel like you've got a good, like, experience and you kind of know what you're doing, then it's, like, time to branch out. That's when you start doing your workshops. That's when you start planning retreat. That's when eventually, after some time, please, like, don't just finish your 200 hour and then be like, hey, come to my teacher training. Like, I see a lot of you out doing that. Stop it. You know, like, hey, maybe after like 10 years, you could lead training courses.
Yeah, because that's what brings the money. So that's what people then go on to do. And it's crazy.
But there's a lot of... there's so much out there, a lot of it isn't good necessarily, right? Because yoga industry has basically no regulation around it, which is, in my opinion, not a good thing. It's okay for some things, but it's generally not helpful to most people.
I see a lot of new teachers not even being able to cue properly.
You know, like, that's scary.
Frame your foot with your hands, you know, or... yeah, I don't know.
And because 200 hours is nothing.
Yeah, but if you've, you know, I took my first teacher training after 7 years of practicing.
That's awesome.
You know, because I was always like, I'm not ready, I'm not ready. And I was not ready. And then, you know, it kind of happens organically when you are ready. And so I've had taken so many classes. I knew the cues by heart, you know, I knew them. And so then I was able to
integrate them more,
say them properly. Yeah.
But I think that's great because personally, I've led teacher training courses before that were not sourced from myself, by the way. It was like in-house corporate situation. So I was beholden to teach a specific program, which was a good program in a lot of ways. But I'm sorry, if you have somebody coming in to do this teacher training who literally just started yoga 6 months ago, I have strong opinions about that. Like, I don't think that should be allowed. Yeah. I think you should actually have a minimum of, like, you've been practicing for, like, at least a year or two. Yeah.
Before and not you can, once a week.
No, before you can even set foot in a teacher training because you're going to slow the whole group down, and it's not fair. Mm. So there's a lot of regulatory issues with yoga in the whole globe.
But I think even as individuals, we can assess, you know, self-assess, hey, am I actually ready?
Personal responsibility. 100%. So,
there's so much to talk about.
I know. I'm like, I get lost, right? Like there's so many different avenues we can go off of, but I guess I want to wrap up that last thought of you for, like entrepreneurial spirit and like what that entails. And you know, so now the latest facet of my entrepreneurialism is like my online membership, which I started basically like early November last year. And I have a retreat coming up at the end of June
in Italy.
And in my mind and heart, for the last year or two, I've very much had teacher training courses very right here in the forefront. That's the kind of next big thing I want to get out. But I've been sort of waiting like for space, the perfect space to do it. Is it in person? Is it online? Is it both? It's going to be both. Yeah. Going, hey, like I'm teaching a workshop next weekend, you know, like I'm not above any of it. Let's do all of it. Like,
I think you have to.
Of course. And I've also volunteered and I've taught female parolees in San Diego. That was such a beautiful experience, by the way. And that just goes to show you like how all humans, even if they've had a rough start in life and went to jail for whatever reason that I'm sure was partly their fault, but also could have just been shitty circumstances, right? Like on the mat, they look the same. They are just like another human, like somebody in this room this morning, you know? So yoga has this beautiful way of like really recognizing and putting a light on the human spirit and just humanity anyway. And like, that's why it's so healing, I think, and why so many people love it and come back to it and are curious about it and want to do a teacher training, which is awesome, you know? And then also just is so important to recognize like what a responsibility it is, not even just to have your own personal practice, but like just to do yoga in the world and especially to teach it. That is like a big responsibility, you know? So be prepared. It's a wild ride, but it's so cool.
Yeah. I think that will be the last word.
Cool.
Because we need to wrap up. Perfect. Because somebody else wants to enter the studio. Yeah,
we better let him in. And we could keep talking for hours, yes. But we'll not.
Yes, so just you will be in Basel teaching at the Looking Glass until the end of June.
I'll
minimum.
Be here through June at least. So come take yoga, bar, all the good stuff.
Almost every day you're here. And then you have this retreat coming up.
In Calabria, southern Italy. Two rooms left.
Yay!
It's almost sold out.
Yeah, amazing. And your website.
Yes, kennacrouch.com. And you can sign up for monthly membership, which gives you access to my virtual library plus live stream classes. You can also just like drop in to online classes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And other things happening in the mix to be revealed.
Thank you, Kenna.
Thank you, Ophelie.
And thank you all for listening.
Thank you. Ciao.
Bye.